My name is Kipkorir Kirui. Broadly, I'm a techie, but more specifically, I'm a designer, an entrepreneur, and a product manager. I've been in the tech ecosystem now for the last, 10 to 15 years, and I'm happy to be on Wamadhai's podcast.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Wamadhai podcast. Today, I'm hosting Kennedy Kirui, a techie, and we'll be talking about the tech industry in Kenya. Karibu sana. How are you doing?
I'm fine, Wamadhai. It's a very nice day.
Yeah.
I'm on leave.
Oh.
So, it's a good
day. So, you have all the time in the world to have, you know, this conversation.
Yes, yeah. Although I also have quite a number of things I would like to do. You know this.
No. You're here for 2 hours and that's it.
Oh, okay. Nisa, I'm stuck here.
How did you get started in the tech industry?
Grew up in the traditional setup, although my parents are a bit different, but from a societal perspective, it was always like your career options were either you become a doctor, actually a journalist was one of them,
how about that?
A lawyer,
or
an engineer.
Yeah.
But I think after I completed high school, I went back home, that's Shags, a town called Bomet.
Yeah.
And then I met this guy, he's actually called Mutai. He used to run a cyber.
Yeah.
And then I used to help out. Ninini. You start learning and playing with computers.
Yeah.
So in high school, I went to Lenana School. I didn't get the opportunity to actually do like computing. It was for the cool kids.
Ah.
And apparently I wasn't one of them then. Okay. Yeah, so just started like playing around, and then I was like, by there, I don't want to do a course in engineering.
Yeah.
So when we had the opportunity to revise our selection for
uni,
because I got into like the JAB program, I switched from a course in engineering to a course in computing. Yeah.
Okay.
So that was basically the entry being that interest in between high school and uni, and then I got in now.
Okay, so uni, you did an IT course, of course.
I did a computer technology course at JQuat. It's an interesting intersection.
JQuat is like the home of like all the top techies I know.
Yeah, it has a really, really large volume of people in tech, and it had a really good environment, and you just kind of learn from people and keep getting better at what you're doing.
Okay.
Yeah.
So tell me, after uni.
Quickly jumping to after uni kind of takes the entire story out of it, because, and this is even something that I do a lot with, I do quite a bit of mentoring for people either in uni or just fresh out of uni.
Yeah.
A lot of the things that you do in uni will actually influence what you will do after uni.
Of course.
So during uni, I actually learned about the iHub. Mm. Used to go for events there, get to know people. And that's how I met Liko from Pesapal.
Mm-hmm.
Got my first internship and really understood.
At Pesapal.
Yeah, at Pesapal. Really understood what it took to be a player in the industry. So after uni, it was a bit easier in the sense that during my internship, I was able to show what I can do.
Mm-hmm.
So I joined Pesapal as a full-time employee then. Mm. And so it was quite an easy transition. But I also think it's important to point out that at that point in time, there were quite a number of entry-level openings. I don't think it's the same now. There's a huge number of people getting into the tech ecosystem, but the opportunities, especially at the entry-level perspective, are not as many as they were then.
Why do you think that is?
I know it's just a factor of demand and supply. So I think over the past, maybe you'd say 5 to 7 years, more and more people have gotten into the space.
Mm.
So there's a big funnel of entry-level potential employees, but I don't think the industry has grown at the same rate. It's really, really grown, but not to the level that they can quickly absorb all the entry-level people that are trying to get into the industry. Granted, especially if you start early, you're able to like really specialize on something and get good at it.
Yeah.
And more importantly, connect and network to really get people to know what you can do. It's a bit easier to transition into
what do you think can be done to improve that situation?
Just give it time.
Okay.
Yeah, it's usually call it a physics problem.
Yeah.
You can't do anything. Like, you cannot add anything, or it just like more and more companies will grow in our ecosystem. There'll be more opportunities in the ecosystem, outside the ecosystem, and you'll see like more now avenues for different types of talent. So starting from, let's say, entry level to mid level to, it will just get better with time. Yeah.
Mm. Yep. You started a business at some point.
I actually
tell me about that.
Yeah, I've really had like an interesting career.
Yeah.
In the sense that, unlike the traditional setup where you're more likely to fall into the career ladder, where you start at one company, slowly work your way all the way to the top.
Yeah.
I think that's the common story. But for me, it's been quite unconventional. And a big reason for it is, I would say I have a huge risk appetite. So yeah. I've always sort of gone with the flow.
Yeah.
So started off at PesaPal. I think after a year, I was like, yeah, I think I want to do something else.
Yeah.
Went into the consulting space.
Yeah.
That was then at iHub Consulting.
Yeah.
The former lead left unexpectedly.
Mm.
And I was given, I think it was either a 1 month contract or a 3 month contract, as they were looking for a replacement for a new lead for the team.
Yes,
I ended up staying there for like 3 years. And the idea behind it is always seeing opportunities, staying curious, and seeing what you can try. So that's basically moving from being a software engineer, whose job on a day-to-day basis, you just wake up in front of your computer, you're coding, you're pushing things, to now having to look for projects. So that's biz dev and sales, having to look for talent. So that's recruitment, retention, and just growing the talent and just building teams. So just staying open kind of allowed me to try so many different things. But coming back to the question around starting my own company, what I noticed along my journey, and especially at one point, I was working for someone else, and I realized for me, the culture in the workplace is the biggest like reason people stay or leave. So if we pay more attention to designing proper companies for our employees, then they are more likely to contribute better and lead to the growth of the company. So at some point, it got to a place I was like, I sort of got banned. So I worked for a certain startup for 6 months. It was a terrible experience. And yeah, I really didn't. I liked the work, but I didn't like how the company ran and all that, the culture and that. So at the end of those 6 months, I was like, I really don't want to go back into employment. I know it's sort of a messed up space, especially the Kenyan culture, the Kenyan work culture. It needs to improve greatly. So I took on the challenge, being someone who's always been passionate about design and entrepreneurship and the tech ecosystem at large. I saw the opportunity to start my own company. It's called Made by People. Started in 2018. I ran it as the CEO and co-founder between 2018 and 2020, the end of 2020. And then at the end of 2020, I decided to try something else and go back into employment. Yeah, so that's the background to starting and running a company.
But where did you leave?
It's a complicated question. So I have a mindset of treating everything as an experiment. So, and this is more to do with my professional work. So I usually say I'll try and do something for a certain amount of time. And coincidentally, it tends to be 3 years. So, having started in 2018, by 2020, it was already year three. And at that point in time, I think a significant driver or factor to the decision to try something different was COVID. So COVID kind of, like, it made most people rethink what they are doing. So if you look at how you're operating your company, how you're growing it, is it scalable? Is it something that can actually reach that mental image that you have? And with during discussions I was having with my business partner and my own reflections, I realized that the way we were structured at that point in time and the space that we were in, especially with COVID, could not support two co-founders. So we ended up having a long discussion around who should stay, who should leave. And at the end of it all, it made more sense for me to leave and then see how I can continue supporting the company, if even if I'm not part of the day-to-day running of the company. And the second part to it is also more from a personal reasons, in the sense that being an entrepreneur kind of makes you like a jack of all trades. You have to do so many different things. And I feel I really haven't had that opportunity in my career to really focus on one thing for a long time. Mm. So in making the decision to leave, I was also thinking a bit more about how do I focus on a certain space for a longer period and be really good at it. So I ended up joining Microsoft as a senior product manager. And that basically allows me to really focus on coordinating with different teams and stakeholders to continuously improve different products that we are working on at Microsoft. And the beauty is that's my mandate. I don't need to worry about, can we meet salaries this month? How is our sales pipeline looking like? Do we, okay, probably at some point I'll have to also start thinking about growing teams and so on. But for now, my primary focus is really getting that deep experience in building and shipping products. And I mean, we are talking about a company that has products that are being used by 100 million people plus. Yeah, so it was quite a convoluted process to it. Yeah.
There was talk recently about how big companies like Microsoft are coming to the space and quote-unquote stealing, poaching IT people. What do you think about that?
Okay, I actually wrote about this and took me like I think about 2 weeks to finish the piece because it's a very sensitive topic, to be honest. There are interesting arguments from both perspectives.
Yeah.
But what I noticed in terms of the ongoing conversation that we've been having for the past, I would say, 2 to 3 months, it's been heavily centered around how startups will lose. But we are not talking about like the benefits of having big tech on this side of the continent. Mm. So first, you have to acknowledge that for sure as a startup and even a corporate, you're going to lose talent because it's a bit harder to compete with the companies coming from that other side of the continent. They're able to compensate better. They also give stock options. So that kind of gives you like little wiggle room. A good number of them will have like really good working culture and working environment. A lot of so it's first we need to admit that startups and corporates in the Kenyan space are feeling the squeeze. It's really pushed up the salaries and consequently affects the setup of your organization. One of the really interesting like quotes I got when I was thinking through this and asking people for different opinions around the same topic was one person talked about the spillover effect. How do you, for example, justify paying like a dev with 5 years more than your 20-year experience like financial person? That part, I really don't want to dwell too much on that. But first, it's very important to recognize that there is definitely in the short term, it's going to be painful for a lot of startups to figure it out. However, on the flip side, and in the short term first, let's talk a bit more about these people being hired. So if we look at Africa, we're still very poor, to be honest. And we often talk about, like we have this, I don't know if it's fascination with entrepreneurship as the only way to get people out of poverty, but it's not really true. I think the more we have people who are earning well and are able to build generational wealth and allow them to take more risk, it's going to be better. So think of someone. And for most of us, our salary doesn't only belong to us. We're supporting maybe 4 to 7 people directly or indirectly.
Yeah.
So if you were to look at the effect of big tech, you also have to ask yourself, what does this injection of better salaries, better compensation mean both in the short term to the people being employed and in the long run? Mm. So it's very good for the labor sector, and I mean Kenya is a free, it's a free economy, it's an open economy.
Yeah.
People often talk about, yeah, it's a demand and supply, it's open until it gets to the point where you're losing talent, you start forgetting that you said it was a free economy, it was an open economy. So for talent, it's amazing. For the startup and the corporate space, in the short term, it's going to be painful. But if we give it like maybe 5 to 10 years, we'll actually reap the benefits of having larger players in the ecosystem who give people opportunities to learn, grow, and earn money, which then goes back into the tech ecosystem in itself and also our economy as, yeah.
What does this mean for IT professionals and experience?
So when you talk about IT professionals as employees...
Employees basically who are being employed by big tech, all these companies, because obviously there's also Amazon is coming.
Yeah.
Google has hired, Microsoft has hired. There's a bunch of people as well.
Okay, so I've talked a bit about that, but just to like break it down into easier to digest points. So the first one is, of course, more money in their pockets, which has a huge spillover effect. Mm. So one, more money is better for anyone. We live in a capitalistic society. So more money, you can live a more comfortable life. You can save more and then take a risk further down the line, maybe get into the entrepreneurship space. Or you can just live a good life. Not everyone is made for this. The second part to more money is building generational wealth. If we look at stories like Jeff Bezos and all these other guys, they didn't start from zero. Jeff got $300,000 from his parents to start the company. So we are basically in probably step one of building that generation that further down the line can actually give their children or whoever they are related with or whoever they are willing to support the capital or the soft landing for them to take the risk. So that's both in the short and the long term. For the talent in a more direct way, you're getting like opportunities now to work in environments that you learn a lot more. So I'm talking about tech.
Yeah.
So both from like tech perspective, your technical skills and design skills will get better, but you'll also learn how to build and ship products at scale. Mm. And you'll also learn how to build teams or work with teams that are spread across different continents, working on different things, how they coordinate and actually make these things happen. Mm. And this kind of also sets you up to be a better entrepreneur down the line, or even now maybe join a startup and bring that knowledge so that you can contribute more effectively.
Because it expands your worldview.
It expands your worldview. And you will even notice with like quite a number of the successful startup founders in our ecosystem, they didn't start from, you'll find that it's someone who was at Google, someone at Facebook, like, or someone even in a more traditional organization who kind of got that experience
and those skills,
and then now use that. Because even for me, I've only been at Microsoft, I think, for the last 7 months, and I can already see like a lot of things that I was doing. Okay, I wasn't doing them significantly wrong, but there were a lot of opportunities for improvement in terms of how you run your company from a strategic perspective, operational, day-to-day, like you can actually learn quite a lot. Yeah.
So there was a scandal in Nigeria. So a tech bro, you know, doing embarrassing things.
Yeah, I saw that one.
What's your comment on that?
So we often talk about the fact that tech is very male-driven.
It is.
And then we don't see why it's male-driven. Mm. And I think that's a very, very good example of why tech is male-driven. Mm. It's generally not a safe space for anyone who's not a tech bro. Mm. So, and we keep seeing scenarios where this is perpetuated. So the particular story that we are talking about, and it goes back to, I've even noticed in terms of people who book mentorship sessions with me, they mostly tend to be male.
Yeah.
I have a good number of like female mentees, but it's a reflection of one, the wider ecosystem itself and the society.
Yeah.
So here you are as a man who should be helping people get into the industry by you using your position of power to hit on women and use that power dynamics to force them to sleep with you or like, so it's really frustrating in the sense that on one side, it's very clear that diversity and inclusion will make your company better. But at the same time, the people who are supposed to be driving efforts
those
to actually make these spaces safer, more inclusive, and more diverse are the ones making it worse. So it's something that we definitely need to shine a spotlight more on.
How do we make this space more inclusive to women and other marginalized groups?
Do you have 3 days
in brief? Yeah.
It's sort of a complicated problem, but I think fundamentally, you have to look inwards as companies.
Yeah.
Like, how are you creating safe spaces? How are you creating a culture that allows everyone to thrive and do their job, irrespective of who they are, where they come from, their gender? And to go now a bit further back, and it's also something that I kind of learned, or not learned per se, had more people share the perspective when we are talking about how startups are losing to big tech. Because their cultures are based on the founder. The typical founder is more likely to be male. And then they bring all their insecurities and issues, and then it gets mirrored in the company itself. So to be honest, the starting point, it's how do we help founders, how do we support more founders to think through about these issues more and actually like create plans to get their companies to be better. It has to start at the top. Many times we talk about these things, uko chini chini, like for like mid-level management or individual efforts. It doesn't work. And even when I used to now run my company, we did a lot of design sessions around helping people build and run more effective teams. And one consistent element that we found, if you don't have like buy-in and support, and not even just buy-in and support, it's more you need for such a change to happen, it has to be driven at the top. If it's not driven at the top,
then it's not.
It's not going anywhere. Yeah. So,
tell me about your mentorship sessions and how they go, and how someone can apply.
Okay. So, having grown up in like a rural setting and then ended up coming to Nairobi, I've been very fortunate to like encounter people who really propelled my career. So starting from back in high school, I had a really good like biology teacher who sort of reinforced this little confidence that I had. And then it got to a point I really knew, I'm actually capable of doing a lot of things. Same thing with uni. I was able to like meet, starting from my classmates to people ahead of us, actually, they could show you the way, like, we've done this, this works, this doesn't work. So for me, especially now seeing the state that our economy is and the increasingly reducing number of opportunities, I've always felt that it's our obligation, and you don't need to at it be 10 years into your career, it's our obligation to support anyone who's coming behind us. So I started the mentorship sessions in an ad hoc way where someone would reach out to me on LinkedIn or on Twitter. They have a question and then I would answer. After a while, I decided, why don't I set up a calendar that you can book, and then we'll have a 30-minute conversation on Tuesday between 12 and 12:30. I'll answer any professional-related questions and I'll help you. I'll connect you to maybe a contact that you can talk to. And the way I'm actually looking at mentorship, the traditional mindset of mentorship is it's someone junior. So I don't look at it that way. I've had sessions where it's a startup founder who's stuck on something and they think I can help them. So that's how I look at it. So ended up joining a platform called the ADP List. Yeah, and it's just a platform to connect mentors and mentees. You book a slot there. And then we have a conversation based on what you need to learn. I'm looking to see how I can restructure it and sort of see how I can involve more people, because it also goes back to the earlier question that you are asking about scarcity of talent.
Yeah.
If we are not investing our time and effort in building the next generation of talent, who are we waiting on to do this? Like, most people want to take talent, but how are you putting like more talent in the space? And it's actually a very fascinating thing in the sense that it has a large lead time or lagging time. So to just give an example, during my iHub days, we used to come together as iHub and then a couple of startups, and we would go to a university like Dedan Kimathi, we would go to Kisii, And we'd have like full day sessions with students around different things. And the beauty, you are getting people in industry to actually commit and talk and interact and engage.
Yeah.
So that's something that you did maybe 10 years ago. Yeah. Can you now imagine for someone who wasn't sure what they wanted to do? And that was for them the opportunity they saw, the different options and the ways to get in. That person now is probably maybe 5 to 6 years into their career. Yeah. And it's just from that, just initial.
It was a spark.
Exactly. And the thing is, we can't want to take from the talent pool and not to contribute to it. The contribution should not be selfish. It should not be directly, I want to hire from this. It's more of, we are trying to help the wider ecosystem.
Mm.
As a startup, I know I'm short on money and time, but what are the small things I can do?
You can be able to
contribute
help.
And help more people get better into the in the industry.
Where do you see the tech space going?
It's the only way up. I mean, there's a saying from a while ago about software eating the world. It's not a lie.
Yeah.
Everything is getting digitized or automated. So
I mean, even cars. So even cars.
Yeah.
Like
everything, literally.
Yeah.
Like every aspect of your life will be touched by tech. But then the question is, or rather, it's an opportunity.
Yeah.
So for a very long time, tech has been purely designed by traditional, like conventional techies.
Mm.
But think of it this way. For example, if we are getting into the agriculture space, how do we get more agriculturalists to collaborate or even get into tech so that they are coming from the real world understanding and then translating it into like more viable and sustainable solutions? So tech will go up. It will keep getting better. There's always the danger of tech breaking societies, making things worse. So it would be interesting to see probably over the next couple of years how we can make the space more inclusive.
And
ethical actually comes from the fact that if the people are designing the technology have no understanding of the space, you're more likely to create products that will cause harm. But if we can get to a space, and it's actually happening now, there's a large codeless movement where you just use a wizard to set up like your application and all that.
Mm.
And the beauty behind the movement is it's empowering more and more people who are in these industries that we keep talking about. So we increasingly moving away from a techie coming to fix your problem and more to Wamadai has been in this space for 10 years. We've given Wamadai the tools to actually build the like the technology that they need that will make their lives easier. Yeah, so it will get better with time.
I love that. And one thing I've gotten from this conversation is that this space is obviously expanding. The pipeline for techies, obviously all the work that all the stakeholders have done is actually working. Obviously, we don't have a lot of entry-level jobs, but it kind of seems like some of the efforts, especially like yours, around mentorship is helping. And also, one thing I picked up is that all these multinationals coming here, it's a good thing.
Yeah, it's definitely a good thing. And it will be even a better thing if we are able to coordinate as an ecosystem. And the reason I'm saying that...
Unity.
Not just from the kumbaya type of the way.
Is it community or unity?
No, it's more of we need to create an active community which responsibilities are shared in a just way.
Yeah.
So, for example, big tech is able to take on more compared to a startup. So how do you balance out roles within the ecosystem in such a way that it's equitable?
Yeah.
And... Yeah. Going back to the conversation about mentoring, it's a small drop in the ocean.
Yeah.
We've seen like the likes of Moringa School, Akira Chicks, Dr. Chow is doing an amazing job with Kamilimu. Kamilimu program.
Yeah.
So those are the efforts we actually need to rally behind.
Mm.
It's very easy to focus on what you can do as an individual.
Mm.
Yeah, it's very important for you to do that individual work.
Mm.
But as an industry, how do we create more Kamilimus, more Akirachik. So even support them to take on more people. So that's the entry level one. Mm. The second part to it, and it's actually a conversation I was having with one of my friends, many people get stuck at some point in their careers. So you find someone who's hit like 4 to 5 years, they get stuck. You become afraid. You're not willing to take any more risks. How do we get, so thinking of it as a funnel, how do you get better entry-level people? How do you move entry-level people to mid-level?
Yeah.
And the most difficult one, how do you move mid-level people to senior?
Yeah.
So think of it from a macro level as less of a micro level.
Yeah.
Yep. So
thank you so much. This has been quite interesting and obviously a long time coming. I've looked for you for a while.
Now you're lying.
It's true.
Nani chome.
It's true.
You're making it look like I refused to come here.
No, I didn't refuse. I mean, our schedules were conflicting. But thank you so much for this conversation. And hopefully we can have it again maybe in like 2-3 years and see where this
not next week.
Definitely not. Oh, where the space is going. But Asante Sana.
Thank you so much. Yeah, it was fantastic. It was nice being here.
Asante.
Okay.
Thank you.